Each and every episode of the Manic Metal Show is brought to you by The Faction Radio. Download the app to your Apple or Android device for free and get involved with the best music from around the world. What more do you want, you fucking Muppets? Crank it loud, bang your head, and join The Faction today.
Fucking metal as fuck, dude!
G'day, welcome to episode 2 of the Manic Metal Show. Today's episode is yet another killer lineup. We've got Solstafir, who are currently on tour with Enslaved, all the way from Iceland. One of those bands that I don't even know how you'd describe their sound. Very unique, and if you watch them, you get transported to another fucking dimension. They're an unreal live act, and they've got so much killer music. Definitely check them out. The chat with Addy was awesome. He's a really interesting cat, and you're really going to enjoy it. Then we've got a chat with Swedish band Dragonland. They're about to hit Australia on tour any day now for a huge East Coast tour. They're currently in Tokyo. I got to catch up with Jonas Heidgert, the lead vocalist, and that was an awesome chat too, man. It's a great doubleheader of a show. And smack bang in the middle, you've got a song by Silent Night, Australian power metal legends, called Masterplan. The interview with Solstafir kicks off right now. Support our sponsor, The Faction. Give the podcast a like and a share, and tell your nan. How are you, man?
Never been better.
Good to hear. You guys have played in so many countries over the years. What are you most looking forward to about heading down to Australia?
I don't know. Just meeting Australian people. I've been to Australia many years ago once, and I used to live in London, so I was mostly hanging around with Australians. So meeting the people. I mean, we've never been there as a band, and we're an old band, so... Ever since 1995, I was writing letters with people in Australia. And of course, during internet times, we've had lots of correspondence with Australians.
Is it summer where you are at the moment? Well, do you get summer?
Well, they say it's summer, but it's sort of been rainy plus 9 degrees for 2 months.
I hope you enjoy our winter, which is probably more summer than you're going to get throughout the year in Iceland anyway.
Yeah, your winter is probably like the world record in Iceland.
Yeah, I would say so. It's pretty soft. We're a very soft people with that regard. What do you think it is about Iceland that there's something crazy where it's a very small country, but there's so many unique bands that come out of there? Do you think it's a matter of the climate or the isolation and being a distinct culture? Or, you know, it's very hard to even put my finger on what genre you guys would be anymore.
I think it's the elves.
The elves. Okay.
Yeah, mostly the elves. they live in the stones, the rocks. We can only see them. Other people can't see them. So we get influence from them. Now, I don't know what it is. The isolation for sure has a lot to do with it. That's one thing that I can point out. All the things is stuff that I can't explain. That's why I just use the elves metaphor. Something spiritual. The other thing is it's mentality thing. Australians have different mentality than Americans or Japanese people. The isolation thing is, only 60, 70 years ago, we were a third world country that no one gave a shit about, and we were a really poor country. And we've been living with the threat of natural disasters for centuries. No one cared when we were younger. There was no metal clubs, rock clubs, rap clubs, country clubs. Just one bar that everybody played and hung together, so sort of an inbreed influence. Something like that. It's a lot to do with surroundings.
Well, I mean, it's not even just the metal, even when it comes to pop music and Björk.
That's what I'm saying. It's not just metal because, I mean, even the Sugar Cubes was the first act to escape out of Iceland to be touring the world in the 80s. They sounded like no other band. And then Björk came along. She sounded like no one else. Then Sigur Rós came along. It sounded like no one else. And I would like to believe that we don't sound like 50 other bands.
I'm yet to find one other band that you sound like, which is fucking hard to do in this day and age.
Well, I'm glad you said it because it would sound really egomaniac, like an egomaniac saying that no one sounds like us. Thank you.
Well, it's the truth. And really, it's hard to do. There's only so many chords. There's only so many scales to bring out music that's truly unique. And also, I feel like it is a slice of Icelandic culture as a soundscape, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before. I don't think the Beatles would have sounded like they did sound if they came from Italy. And I don't think that Iron Maiden would have sounded like Iron Maiden if they came from Japan. So we sound more Icelandic than Russian, I guess. We all have the same blood, the same heads, but this is your surroundings and how you grew up, your past, the history, and you know, these bands came from Birmingham in England. There was a reason for it, and it has all this Birmingham thing had an influence. Iceland has that influence on us, and we sound like we do. So that's why I abuse the elf stuff, because this is kind of hard to explain. It's almost like if you watch Star Wars and we talk about the Force. If you're going to take that into reality, you'll sort of clinch or laugh, but in a way, it's true.
You've got so many EPs, 5 full-length albums. What can the Australian fans expect as far as the live show? Is it going to be a bit from across the albums or more focusing on some of the newer material, or is it leaving it a bit of a surprise?
Just pure fucking Armageddon.
Good shit.
I'm kidding. It just sounds really cool. We don't have a long stage time, so it's going to be hard. We'll only be playing like 5 songs. We have long songs. I'll have to skip the jokes. There's some standard songs that we always do. There's some songs that we want to do from the new album. If we do headline shows today, it's like 90 to 120 minutes. We'll do 4 songs of the new album. I mean, most of our songs are 7 to 10 minutes, so it's not that many songs. So playing anything shorter than an hour is very hard for us. Not hard to compare to not having a home or something, but it's a very luxury problem.
Yeah, first world problems. Are all of your members still based in Iceland?
Yeah. We used to live, you know, a former bass player moved to Australia. I lived in London. I lived in Scotland. I've lived in Norway during the time the band was active. Our bass player lived in Greece. He lived in England. Our drummer lived in England. So, but now we're all here.
I guess the reason I ask is it doesn't feel like you're sending ideas across the internet. It feels very organic that you're all in the same room working on these songs together. I think that's lost in today's day and age a little bit.
Yeah, we sort of, you know, through the years, I've had it more confirmed that band spirit is priceless. It's like the elves. It's something you cannot touch. So band chemistry is a very holy thing, being in a band. If that gets destroyed, band will die. Being four together writing music is priceless. If you can enjoy playing one riff for an hour, you're in a good band. You're good chemistry.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because you can get yourself in a room with so many great players, and no matter how well you can all play, sometimes there's just no synergy between you. Whereas you can meet one person and play for 2 minutes and all of a sudden it comes.
Most people that have written the best songs, music in the world, you know, in rock and roll world, are not any super freaks. I mean, who do you think wrote better songs, Kurt Cobain or Yngwie fucking Malmsteen?
Look at the sales.
Yeah. Look at the sales.
Did you guys ever have much pressure early on to write more songs in English? Obviously, that's what everybody seems to want from a label perspective. But I really enjoy hearing music in a language I don't understand, because to me, it's like hearing an instrument where I'm not trying to decode every note. I'm just enjoying the experience.
I'll tell you something that I sort of figured, because people have still been talking that it sounds exotic and I don't get it. It's like, I would say, oh, the Australian accent is so exotic. And you're like, it's just my accent, mate. When I was watching Lord of the Rings, the third movie, because, you know, Tolkien made this fake language that on his own, it's sort of based on English or old Icelandic and all that stuff. Aragorn is being crowned as king or something. He's standing on the mountain and he starts to sing this song. And he sings it in, again, elves. He sings it in this elfish language, but it's a bullshit language. It sounds like Icelandic to most people, I guess. So I sort of got it when I saw that, because, well, obviously it's recorded in Abbey Road with the greatest sound and engineers in the world, but this is sort of spirit. He was singing something from the heart, but obviously a great actor, singing something from the heart in a language that no one understood. And I thought, oh my God, this is probably when, if you're from, I don't know, if you're from Czech Republic and you hear Icelandic, I guess it's what it sounds like. I can imagine it sounds like that.
For an Australian with our terrible fucking accents, when we hear your band, it's like almost an alien language. It's so different to the way we speak. And it's just interesting to be so drawn in by something where I have no fucking idea what's being said until I translate it.
Yeah, I mean, we have songs in English. We did albums in English, but it's mostly like when I started singing more clean. I mean, I used to scream my ass off all the time. When I started singing more clean, I felt more comfortable to sing in the language that you think. It's like non-filtered expression. It's more from the heart. So I can't be screaming about dragons and swords in English and saying I'm singing it from the heart.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
It wouldn't be.
Well, anybody that's looking at tickets, you can go to David Roy Williams Presents. It's Enslaved at Solstafia. The tour kicks off on Wednesday, the 29th of August in Perth, and then goes through Sydney, Brisbane, and Melbourne. So anything you'd like to say to the Aussie fans before you get going, man?
I'm looking forward mostly going to, with all respect for the other places, I'm mostly looking forward going to Perth because I want to see the Bon Scott statue.
That's one that is on many people's bucket lists.
Yeah.
There's usually lots of kangaroos on the way, so you won't be disappointed.
I'll have my machete with me.
Fair enough. It's good meat. Don't worry about that.
Good. All right.
Thanks very much, Addy. Take care, man.
Thanks a lot. See you down under.
Welcome back. Today's guest is Jonas Heidgert, lead vocalist for Swedish power metal legends Dragonland. How are you doing, Jonas?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you.
So you guys are about to tour Australia for your first time ever. I mean, how excited are you to finally be touring down under?
We're kind of beyond excited. It's really hard to describe. This is a fantastic opportunity for the entire band just to visit Australia, and that we're going to play there is unreal.
Have you been wanting to come down under for a long time?
Yeah, I've always wanted to go like just to visit the country as a tourist. Unfortunately, it's kind of expensive, so I've never been able to realize it. So this is a great bonus for me.
You're going to be here during the Australian winter, but honestly, compared to a Swedish winter, I think you're going to be fine. Our winters are pretty tame compared to a Swedish winter. So it's going to be a bit more like summer.
Swedish summer in Australian winter.
I think so. It's been more like that for you guys.
Oh, that's cool. I prefer heat before cold, so.
I think you'll be okay. You guys have been around since 1999, and generally the band is classified as a power metal band. To my ears, it seems more neoclassical than anything. And it's like somebody brought Beethoven into the future in a time machine and gave him an electric guitar and a Judas Priest album or something. How much influence does classical music have in the formation of your music?
The easiest way to explain it is like the two first albums is more pure power metal. Then we thought we had concluded the Dragonland Chronicles and wanted to explore what else we could do. So then we involved Olof and Elias more into the songwriting process. And they're great classical fans, especially Beethoven and Mozart and that kind of stuff. So they implemented their touch to it, and it's pretty clear when you listen from Starfall and forward.
There's a tendency in heavy metal with technical music where it's too technical. It's just, look how fast I can play, look how good I am. But you guys have always been very focused on the strength of the song. That's obviously very important to the songwriting process too. I mean, some of the shit is crazy technical, but at the end of the day, there's still a catchy chorus and there's still a strong song holding it all together. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. The melodies and the feeling of the songs are the most important things. So that's how we write the songs. Some of the songs even starts out with the vocal lines, and then the song is built around the vocals.
Okay, cool.
So it's a little odd way to do it, but
well, it works.
Yeah, it does.
It would help. I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, you played drums on the first two albums. Is that correct?
Yep, that's true.
Knowing that information, I mean, you've obviously got an idea of how the syncopation works, how song structure works, and all that sort of thing. So when you say, you know, we're writing it to vocal ideas, you're coming at that process as a drummer as well, which has got to add, you know, a lot to the process.
Yeah, but when I played the drums back in those days, we wrote most of the things in the rehearsal rooms. The two first albums, we created the vocal lines after the songs were finished, but from Starfall on forward, it was the other way around. So I wrote the drums for the two first albums after the riffs, and I tried to make it just fit in there somehow.
With the evolution of recording technology, these days it's so much easier to record a high-quality album without it costing an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
Have you found that your songwriting and recording approach has evolved a lot between your debut album, The Battle of the Ivory Plains, between then and 2011's Under the Grey Banner?
Definitely. First of all, as we grow older, we write songs slower, and it's because everybody has recording possibilities back home.
Yeah.
You don't get the same pressure as if you book a studio that costs a fortune. You really need to be ready for it. So, but now it's like you can just record a song at home.
Given the level of technicality, the early albums were very technical, don't get me wrong, but the technicality and the classical element of the later albums, does that make that process easier, given that you have more time to work on it and send the ideas back and forward, and, you know, rather than just going into the studio and saying, oh shit, we only have 20 hours to get this done, you know, when you have a limited budget?
Definitely. That's one of the explanations why our next album takes this long to create. Everybody's started families and that kind of stuff, so it takes its time. And since we don't have the pressure, except for everybody asks when the next album comes out, it takes much longer time. And we're a lazy band as well.
It's worth the wait. I mean, the albums are all good. That's the main thing. At least you're not bringing out a Saint Anger or something like that halfway through.
Ooh, yikes. I really hope we don't.
What keeps you guys so motivated and inspired to keep touring and playing after all these years? Is it just the, you know, the connection you've formed through, with the music, or are you still just as driven as you were in your younger years to bring out more Dragonland music? It's just a matter of life getting in the way of life, as it tends to do.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say we still really love doing it, but since family, job, other projects gets kind of in the way. So since we play kind of rarely, we don't play many shows per year. This is going to be a Dragonland record year in amount of gigs. We'd like to play more often and do that kind of stuff, but it's not always just not possible to do it all the time.
Well, unfortunately, heavy metal isn't known for being very well paying.
Exactly. So that's one of the problems. It costs a lot of money to tour, and we can only take up the offers that makes us break even, sort of.
Yeah, sort of. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
You guys have had some awesome covers over the years from ex-Japan, and I think the most well-known might be the Never Ending Story theme. How did you come to cover that song? Because it works perfectly, and it's one of those covers, when I first heard it, I thought, how has nobody done this already? It's just such a great idea.
We were discussing it. It was two songs we had to choose between, but this one was the most obvious choice, since the original is a fantastic song and the movie still kicks ass. So we did the best we could and just made a power metal version of it. And that's one of our most famous songs, even though it's not ours.
Oh, well, you made it your own. That's the main thing.
Yeah, sure.
You've got 5 albums under your belt at the moment. What are you planning to bring to your fans in Australia? Can we expect to hear songs from across your catalogue? Or, you know, what's on the menu for the Aussie fans?
A very big selection of songs. I can't tell you that much into detail, but it's going to be the longest set list we've ever played. We picked the songs that we think will work the best down for our Australian fans.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be so fun.
And you've got the fine people at Stormrider Touring bringing you down. Stu's a good friend of mine, so he'll look after you, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy.
He is. He'll get you down to the right pubs and drinking the good beer as soon as you get in, I'm sure.
Perfect. So I'm gonna enjoy myself then.
I think so, yeah.
I like beer.
Well, that's Australian people. We like beer too. So I think beer and power metal is a very good combination.
It is. It is.
Could we expect any new songs perhaps? Or how far along are you in the process of a new album?
Without spoiling too much, yeah, we have one song that is completely finished, and we have a lot of blueprints for more. Mainly it's Elias who composes the songs at the moment, but also Jesse is composing a lot of songs as well that might turn out to be Dragonland material. We haven't really decided yet, and hopefully from the beginning of 2019 we're gonna pick up the pace and try to finish the next one. So hopefully soon it's gonna be ready for release.
And where else would you like to take the band? I mean, we know that you haven't been to Australia before. Is there anywhere else that Dragonland has always really wanted to tour but you just haven't been to yet?
I would actually say, without exaggerating, that Australia is absolutely on the top of the bucket list, because there's kind of few bands from Europe, I guess, touring there. So it's a really cool thing for us to do. Other than that, I'd say we've been to a few places here in Europe. Maybe if we got the opportunity for a longer tour in the US or South America or something like that. So we've only been to Prog Power. That's the only show we've done in America.
That's a great show to play in America, though.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. Biggest party I've ever had.
You probably needed 6 months to recover after that one.
Yeah, I was hospitalized for 4 weeks, so
that's good.
Swedish version of Betty Ford Clinic or something.
Well, I'm sure we can give you a suggestion for some Australian rehab clinics if you need so after this tour.
Good to hear that you're prepared for us.
Oh, yes, definitely. I can give you some recommendations for sure.
Cool, thanks.
Your first show is the 5th of September in Canberra, followed by Sydney on the 6th. You've got the 7th in Brisbane and the 8th in Melbourne, and there's also a meet and greet on the 4th of September at Utopia Records in Sydney. Anyone in Sydney, get on down and meet the band, say hello, get your album signed. Is there anything you'd like to say to the Aussie fans before you head off on this tour down under?
Well, they better be prepared for a big party. We're beyond thrilled to be able to do this, and I think you're going to see it when we perform for you.
You know, so many people really say, oh, we're excited to come to Australia, but I can feel when I'm talking to you that you guys really are fucking excited to come down.
Definitely, yeah. This is like a once-in-a-lifetime chance just to visit Down Under for me personally.
Are you planning on eating any of our native animals? A lot of them we serve on the plate, so there's emu, crocodile, kangaroo. My recommendation would be crocodile. It tastes pretty good.
Okay, okay. I've been asked a similar question about a week ago if I wanted to try, and I think I would like to try kangaroo in that case.
Kangaroos are actually very healthy.
So I heard.
I just like eating crocodile because I grew up around crocodiles and they scare the shit out of me. So the more of them that are out of the water, the better.
So it's a kind of payback every time you eat.
Kind of, yeah. Thank you so much for chatting to me today, Jonas. It's been awesome talking to you. Everybody, get your tickets. They've got the four shows we mentioned already and the meet and greet in Sydney. You can get the tickets through Stormrider Touring or at Oztix. It's going to be a great show. Thanks a lot, man. It's been awesome to chat to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Thank you, and enjoy the long-ass flight down to Australia.
I'll try.
Suck shit! Heavy metal rules!